Say good morning. Let's begin. We're going to pick up today's daf is daf Chav Zayin. I apologize in advance. We're going to have to end a little bit early this morning, but it's a short daf. Don't worry about it. Not loud doses. You know, some things don't change. You're sitting in the back of the room, you know, on homework, calling your mother right after this year. All right, so we left off. Four lines up from the bottom. Ve'im mevarin amita zekufo. So remember again that the Mishnah said that we do not go ahead and provide the Suda Savra on turned over bed. So the Gemara says, Tan Rabbanon, haholet l'beisal nabos. So what this is talking about over here is that l'maisa, obviously the avelim are sitting on the overturned beds. The idea is those providing the Suda Savra, those who are there helping, they do not go ahead and sit on the overturned bed, but rather they go ahead and sit on a regular chair, regular bed. Says the Gemara, Tan Rabbanon, haholet l'beisal. If a person goes to a shiva home, im haya libo gaspo, yevaruhu amitos kfuyos. Ve'im lav, yivaru amitos kufos. This is very interesting. We'll say, halacha ma'isa, if you go to, not halacha ma'isa, but the Gemara says, if you go to a beis avel, and you are very close with the avel, you are permitted to sit on the overturned bed with the avel. That's what libo gaspo, closeness. But if you are not very close with the avel, then even if you're providing the sudas havra, you should not do so on the overturned bed, but rather you should sit on a regular bed. Rava isra be'milsa. Something bad happened to Rava, which again we've seen throughout this Masechta, is a euphemism for he suffered a loss. So he was sitting Shiva. So Rava's sitting Shiva. So, So Abba Bar Marto comes to go out and visit. He was also known as Abba Bar Minyumi. Rava Zokif. So what happened? So Rava saw that he had a visitor. He overturned one of the beds for Abba Bar Marto to go out and sit down and so that he could spend time with him while he's being Menachem Avol. Abba Bar Marto, coffee. Abba Bar Marto took the same bed and he overturned it in an effort to sit on an overturned bed with Rava. Amar Rava said, Kama les be daite lahay tzor mirabonon. What das, what knowledge, what seichel this individual lacks. Meaning, what Rava was saying is, listen, we're not that close. Right? Meaning, we're not such good friends that you come over here and you overturn a bed and sit next to me. That's why I dafka went ahead and turned it right side up so that you should sit. I appreciate your visit, but you're not so close with me to be able to sit on an overturned bed next to me. Tana Rabbanan. Haholich mi makom l'makom. So this is an interesting case. Let's say a person is traveling, specifically traveling on business. And a person hears that he suffered a loss. So what is halacha? In this kind of situation, it could take potentially a little bit of time until a person is able to get back home. So if you're able to decrease your business dealings, you know, in this interim period before you get home, you should do so. The imlav, but if for some reason you're unable to go ahead and minimize your business dealings, yigal gelimahim. So if you look at Rashi, he says yigal gelimahim ve'ino oses schor b'fnei atzma elim chabura. Then it is better to conduct one's business dealings as part of a group and not as an individual. Tan Rabbanon, me'im asai kofin es hamitos. We'll say, at what point in time do we overturn the beds as a display of mourning? Mishayetse mi pesach beso div Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer says, as soon as the funeral bier, as soon as the funeral bed leaves the home, then again at that point in time, at least some of the mourning displays begin, and one should begin already to overturn the bed. Rabbi Shimon Bishua says, no, mishayistom hagola. Rabbi says, this is interesting. Rashi explained that stimos hagola means the closing of the casket, right? The actual closing of the lid of the casket. The truth is, the way we interpret it, which is the opinion of most of the opinions is that stimas hagola represents again the filling in of the grave. So what Rabbi Yoshua is really saying is that lamaisa mourning behaviors begin from stimas hagola. And that is halacha lamaisa. That's why again for our purposes avelos does not really begin. There's a whole discussion in terms of what filling in of the grave means. Is filling in of the grave means just the covering of the casket with dirt, or does it ultimately mean the entire filling in of the grave, including the mound on top? But lamaisa it means some type of filling in of the grave. So the Gemara says, "Ma'aseh Rabbi Gamliel Hazakin." Rabbi Gamliel Hazakin passed away. Kevan shiatzim pesach beso. So when the funeral bier left his house, Amar lahem Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer said to the members of the family, "Kafel mitoseichem, overturn your beds." V'chevan shnistam agolal. And after the grave was filled in, or according to Rashi, after the casket was closed, Amar lahem Rabbi Yoshua, "Kafel mitoseichem." Rabbi Yoshua told them, "Turn over your beds." Amrulo, they said to Rabbi Yoshua, Kvar kafinu api zakin. We already overturned our beds on, based on the statement or the direction of Rabbi Eliezer, our elder. Tan Rabbanan. It's interesting discussion. We know that on Shabbos, all of the external displays of mourning are suspended. One of the external displays of mourning is Kfiyas Amita, is overturning of the bed. So the Gemara asks over here, at what point in time on Erev Shabbos do we begin to go ahead and turn back, turn the beds right side up, you know, as a sign of the impending arrival of Shabbos and the suspension of all external displays of mourning, to which the Gemara answers, Mina Mincha Ulama. You do it from Mincha time and on. I will say this does not mean Mincha Gidol. This is not like midday. What this means is afternoon time. Amra Baravuna, Afa Pikein, Eino Yoshev Ale Achetech Shach. I will say it's a very important halacha. So let's say for our purposes today. So what we do halacha lemaisa is we pretty much allow the Avel to ready himself and ready his home within the amount of time that he needs before Shabbos to get ready. So let's assume today's day and age it's 2 hours. Two hours before Shabbos, we let the Avel get up. The Avel could change his clothing. The Avel could go ahead and put away the low chairs, overturn the bed. So what's interesting, the Gemara says, is that even though Lemaisa, you're permitted to go ahead and turn the bed right side up, you may not sit on that overturned bed, meaning on that turned right side up bed, until Shabbos actually starts. Once Shabbos starts, then the Avel is permitted to go ahead and sit down in a regular chair, which I will say. So I'll tell you where this comes up. Let's say again, Shabbos starts at 6 o'clock, and Lemaisa again, you know, we let the Avel get ready at 4 o'clock, so the Avel's already changed into a Shabbos clothing, and somebody comes to visit. So in that case, again, the Avel would still have to sit on a low chair, right? He would not be able to sit on a regular chair, even though, again, he's already within the window of Shabbos preparations. Ulamotzai Shabbos, and what happens on Matzai Shabbos? This is very interesting. Even though now, let's say the Avel is getting up Sunday morning. Shiva ends Sunday morning. Nevertheless, Chozer Vekofe, he still has to go ahead and on Matzai Shabbos essentially observe all of the morning practices again, even though it's for a very limited window. So what we learned in the Braisa. Hakofe, the rabbis teach us. Hakofe mitaso, lo mitaso bilvatu kofe. El kolamito sheish lo besoch beso hu kofe. So when you have to do kfiyas amit and overturn the bed, it's not just your own bed that you overturn, but rather all of the beds in the home are overturned. Va'afilu yesh lo aser mitos ba'aser ba'aser makomos. Even if you have 10 beds in 10 different places, kofe es kulan. You overturn all of them. Even if there are 5 brothers and one of them died, kulan kofin. So we'll say again, the novelty over here is you might have thought that again, the Havamina at least is, maybe kfiyas amita should only have to be done by one of the members of the family and that takes care of everyone's obligation. No, halacha lemaisa, everyone has the obligation of kfiyas amita. V'im haisa mita miyuchedes lekelim. However, again, if you had a bed, Rabosai, that was not used for sitting, remember, we'll understand times of the Gemara, so beds were not just used for sleeping, right? It's not the pshat like you had like a living room set. So beds were also used for sitting. So the idea over here is if you have a bed that was not used for sitting, but you had a bed that was used for stuff, storage, right? You used to put stuff on, meaning that it was not Yudavka, not used for sitting or sleeping. It was used to hold your kelim. Ein tsarich lekafosa. You do not have to overturn it. Dargosh. Similarly, if you have a dargosh, I mean, who doesn't? Ein tsarich lekfoso. Ela zogfo. You don't have to turn it. Well, we'll discuss. We're purposely not defining this now. We'll see what this means in just a moment. So you don't have to turn it over. Rather, zogfo. I will say, so we'll see. Zogfo means you stand it up. Reb Shimon Gamliel says, Dargosh matir es karvitov, v'unofo me'ilav. Shimon Gamliel says, now I'll tell you what you do with the Dargosh. We're going to see, Dargosh we'll see is if I'll tell you, well, all right, no, I'm not going to tell you yet. I'm going to keep you in suspense. Right? So Dargosh, you untie karvitov are the loops. You untie the loops, and that way, again, we will see, I don't know what you call it. It's like the loophole. You untie the loops, and essentially, it's the equivalent of what today is a box spring, right? So the you untie the loops, and the frame with the frame that supports the mattress falls down. We'll see in just a moment. V'nofa me'ilav, my dargosh. So what is a dargosh? Amar ula arsa de gada. Look at Rashi; it's very helpful, right? Arsa de gada. Rashi says mita shemiyachedim osa lemazeltov. The in mishtamshin baklum. Ela miyachadin osa lishos mazel tov aler. Well, it's very interesting. People used to have an additional bed in the house as a symbol, as a sign, as an omen for good mazel. For good mazel. Now, why does a bed represent good mazel? So first of all, again, obviously a bed is associated with procreation, ultimately Piri of Arivia, which represents, again, good mazel. So it was not uncommon for people to have a mazel bed. Nobody used it, but it symbolized mazel. So that kind of bed, which essentially is never used for sitting or for sleeping, does not need to be overturned in a base oval. So Amar li Rabba, that's the case. Alami ata gabe melech. What about the following situation when it comes to a king? Disnan kala am mesubin ala aret vehu mesav ala dargosh. So say, remember, if the king Chas Shalom suffers a loss and everybody's come to being Menachem Aval, everybody sits on the ground and the king sits on the dargosh. Someone says, Mi'ika midi dad ha'idna lo osivne, v'hashtam osivnele. So does that make sense? If you tell me that the dargosh is this mazel bed, so then a bed that no one ever uses, now suddenly during Shiva, the king is going to sit on it. Sounds a little bit strange. Maskev Rav Ashi, Rasi raises the kash on that. My kushya, what's so strange about that? Midi de havachilo shtia. This whole thing about a king sitting Shiva is strange. Why? Just look at what happens for his food. See, until this point in time, did the populace ever supply the king with food and drink? And yet now what? Now during Shiva, people supply the king with food and drink. So what the Gemara is saying over here is, just because it looks strange doesn't mean it's not true. After Vaharaya, the eating and drinking, we supply the king with food and drink, even though we never did that before. So it's possible that the king sits on the dargosh, even though no one normally sits on the dargosh. Rather, if you're going to have a question, here's your question. Disnan, dargosh eino tzarech lekafoso. A dargosh, you don't have to overturn. Elo zokfo. Rather, you stand it up. V'i arsa de darga, digada, amai eino tzarech lekafoso. But again, if it really is this mazel bed, why don't you have to overturn it? Hotran, we learned, Hakofe mitasa lo mitasa bilvadu kofa. Rabbi, we just learned before that when you have to overturn your bed, it's not only your bed. Ela kol mitos sheyesh lo besoch beso kofa. What did we just learn, Rabbi, a few lines ago? That Allah said the din of kfiya samita applies to what? Every single bed in your home, even what? Even beds that you don't use. So if that's the case, then why wouldn't you go ahead and overturn the dargosh, even if what? Even if lamais, it's not a bed that you normally use. Umay kasha, what's the question? Why? Maybe it shouldn't be any different than a bed that is set aside for use for utensils. This sanyam haisa mita miyuchades lekelim enotzarach lekafosa. Rather, because we learned lamais. So again, maybe the Gemara say maybe the dargosh is like the mita that is used just for kelim, and just like a mita that is just used for kelim does not have to be overturned because again, it's simply not used for sitting or for sleeping. Maybe the dargosh is like the mita miyuchades lekelim, and therefore always doesn't have to be overturned. El ikash yahakash. Rather, if you're going to have a question, here's your question. Rav Shimon Gamliel says, dargosh amat your karvitov v'unofa me'ilav. Rather, Rav Shimon Gamliel said that a dargosh, you just untie the loops, and we'll see the body of the bed itself just falls down. V'sakadaitcha arsa degada my karvitan islay. And if you're going to say that the dargosh is this mazel bed, then what loops does it have? Ki asa rabin amrle ahumi rabbanon. I guess what the Gemara is asking over here is that lamaisa, what Reb Shimon Gamliel is describing is a very specific, we'll see, type of a leather bed. So we assume the dargosh is not like that. So then why? What does untying of the loops have to do with the dargosh? Therefore, the Gemara says, Ki asa ravin amrle ahumi rabbanon rav tachlivu b'marav shmei to have a shchiach b'shuka digildoi. My dargosh, what is a dargosh? Arsa d'tzala. Look at Rashi, arsa d'tzala, or. Rashi says or. So dargosh, Rabbosai, means a bed with a leather, I don't know which, it's not frame. What, you know, let me show you a picture. My last picture that I have. So I gotta get, I haven't maximized my pictures here. Right? So again, Rabbosai, see here, you see, you have a bed, like a cot, right? So you have a bed, and what you have over here is you have the frame, and again, you have a piece of leather that is stretched out within the frame. So again, you have one of two options now. Sorry?
Like a stretcher.
Like a stretcher. Stretcher cot. So you can either go ahead and you could put, let's say, something on top of that leather, you know, cot stretcher area, or you could actually just sleep right on that. So the Gemara is suggesting now that is the definition of a dargosh. A dargosh is this bed with the outstretched leather. But what would we call that leather piece? You'd call that
support.
The support.
We're
no one's being especially
getting
helpful.
Colder. We're getting colder.
Yeah. All right, whatever. It's
the infrastructure.
It's like tarpaulin.
Yeah. This, I'm sorry?
Tarpaulin.
Tarpaulin.
We call it a tarpaulin.
Oh, tarpaulin.
It's pulled taut.
Yeah, right. It's pulled taut. Yeah, yeah. Okay, good. You get it. You get it. If anyone online has any ideas, feel free to email in as well. All right. So the Gemara says, make sure you'll check to see if anybody's emailing in. Okay, so the Gemara says the following. The Gemara says, so that's dargosh. That's dargosh. It's marnami, amrab yermia, dargosh, sirugo mitocho, mita, siruga al gabar. Rabosai, so what differentiated a dargosh from a regular bed? Because remember, regular beds were also had the tarpaulin. I like, it sounds so much better than tarpaulin. Right? Had leather. So what was the difference between them? Here's the difference. The Gemara says, dargosh, so the leather was stretched out in the frame, mita, the leather was stretched out on top of the frame. Mm-hmm. Okay. Amar Rav Yaakov bar Acha, Amar Rav Yosheh ben Levi, Halach Rav Shimon Gamliel. The Halach was Rav Shimon Gamliel. The Rabbi said, if you have a dargosh, which now we've established again as a bed with a leather support that is stitched within the frame, so how did Rav Shimon Gamliel say to deal with it? Just simply untie the loops. And what happens when you untie the loops? What happens? The leather piece just simply falls down. So essentially what you do is, by untying the loops, it's no longer a bed. It's no longer a bed. So therefore you don't even have to bother really with going ahead and what? With turning it over. You just simply make it a non-bed. Itmar Nami, Am Rabbi Yaakov Bar Acha, Am Rabbi Asi, Mita Shenaklitea Yotzin. If you have a bed, Rabbi Osai, Naklitea means its posts extend. Zokfa Vedayo. You just simply stand it up, and it's enough. Look at Rashi. Naklite eitzim yotzin mitukonim. Lemirashol sub, ulemirashol sub. Venosnin eitz aruch aleyen. Venosnin asadinin aleyen. Lishmar meazavuvim. So what is this? This is a canopy bed. But when we think of a canopy bed, we often think of a canopy bed with four posts. This is a two-post canopy bed. So essentially what it looks like is you look like a tent. Now Rashi points out, why would people do this? Insects. To keep away insects. It's mosquito netting. To keep away insects. So both sides. So what do you do if you have a two-post canopy bed? Obviously, you can't turn that over because the posts are there. The Gemara says, not a problem. Just go ahead and turn it on its side. And once you turn it on its side, that's simply enough for Dayo. Tan Rabbanan, Yoshin Agabe Kisa Agabe Udaini Godola Agabe Karka. If a person, instead of turning over their bed, sleeps on a chair, or sleeps on the large part of the mortar, or sleeps on the ground, lo yate de chavasa, you have not fulfilled your obligation. What does that mean? I'm Rabbi Yochanan. Shalom kim kviya samita. Well, it's very interesting. The din of turning over the bed is not a din in just simply sleeping in discomfort, because otherwise, again, I could just leave my bed alone and sleep on the floor. There is a specific din of turning over the bed, as we spoke about earlier in the Masechta. And therefore, again, even if you sleep on the floor, but you haven't turned over the bed, you have not fulfilled the halacha. Tan Rabbanan, mechabdin u'marbitzin bebeis ha'avel. You're permitted to sweep. Mechabdin means sweep. Marbitzin also means to sprinkle water. Remember, they had dirt floors. So on dirt floors, you want to make sure that the dirt doesn't, you want to keep the dirt down. So they would often sprinkle water on the floor to keep the dirt settled. So you're permitted to go ahead and do that in a beis ha'avel. You can wash dishes, right? You can wash plates, you can wash cups, you can wash jugs, you can wash all these things in a beis ha'avel. Also, see, the idea here is, even though we said before that lemaisa, the avel has an isra malacha, the avel is not permitted to work, but halacha lemaisa, things that are needed for the basic upkeep of the home, you are permitted to do. Now, the ideal is the avel himself should not do it, someone else should do it, but it's permitted to be done in the beis ha'avel. The ein mavin es hamugmar ves habeson beis ha'avel. We do not bring, Rabbi Osai, mugmar and some spices, potpourri, right? You don't go ahead and bring potpourri to the beis ha'avel. Se'ini, is that true? V'hatani bar kafra, v'ein mevarichin lo ala mugmar v'ala some beis ha'avel. I, but bar kafra said, that if there is spices or potpourri in the base oval, we don't make a bracha on it. Bruchi hu delo mevarchin, we don't make a bracha on it. Ha asuye maisinan. But yet what? Lamaisa, again, the fact that Bar Kappa says you can't make a bracha on it. That tells you can't make a bracha, but what? But you can bring it. Lo kasha. Haba beis ha'avel. Haba beis ha'menachamim. It was at two different places. Look at Rashi, Menachamim. Krovav mevi'in inyanim shal ochel. It was very interesting. So apparently, they used to have two different spaces. There was the space, the area where the Avelim would sit, and the area where the Menachamim, where the consolers would sit. So in the area where the Avelim sit, there you don't bring Besamim. But in the area where the Menachamim sit, there you are permitted to go ahead and bring Besamim.
But don't make a bracha.
Correct. Says the Mishnah. Ein molich in the Beis HaAvel, lo betavlo, velo ba'as kutla, velo bekanun. So we'll say, this is not talking about when you bring the food for the Sudas Havra. When you bring the food for the meal of consolation, which remember again is the meal that occurs immediately after the burial. So we do not bring that meal. B'tavla, so b'tavla is kutla and kanun rabosai are all fancier types of utensils, of trays. So tavla literally means a tray. As kutla rash says means a tamchoy, a platter. Kanun means a fancier basket. Rather, elabas solim. We bring, now bless you, we bring the sudas havra in simple baskets. The truth is usually sal usually refers to a basket that's made from some type of branches or weeds. We do not say birchas aveilim on chol hamoed. Remember, we spoke about before. Birchas aveilim refers, bless you, refers to the fact that after the levaya, they often had the sudas havra, the meal of consolation, in the street. In the street, people would come and the non-mourners would give the mourners a bracha. That was called the birchas aveilim. It was a much longer bracha. We don't do this bracha anymore today. So you don't do that on chol hamoed. Aval omdim b'shura. However, if there is a burial on chol hamoed, we do go ahead and we form a shura, we form a line to be menachim avel, umenachamim, and we console the mourners. Upotrin as harabim, but Rabosai, after the levaya, we azan cholamoid. We tell people to go home. We tell people not to go to the home of the avel. We tell people simply go home. Ein manichin as anita berachov. L'shalal lahargil as simply on cholamoid. We do not place the funeral bier in the street in order not to tempt people to eulogize, because obviously if the body's right there, people will be more tempted. We don't want eulogies on chol hamoed, so therefore we don't place the body in the street. And we never place the bodies of women, meaning if a woman passed away, we never place a woman's body in a public area, meaning in the street, out of kavod to her. And I will say, what does that mean? So remember, again, you're talking about times where burial in a casket was very uncommon. People did not bury in a casket. What was the concern? Remember, again, without getting too graphic, whenever a person passes away, there are always different types of secretions that come out of the body. The concern was that a woman may bleed after she dies. And again, remember, the tachrich mazu, the shrouds are white. Mm-hmm. So that blood will show up. So in order to avoid, God forbid, in any way compromising the dignity of the deceased, so again, whereas bodies of men we often would put in the street for the levaya, bodies of women were never put in public view. Says the Gemara. They both said, this I have to tell you, is one of the most amazing Gemaras you're going to see in this entire Masechta. Tan Rabbanan, because it tells you about the way that Halacha responds, that Halacha is sensitive to the individual. Tan Rabbanan, Barishana Hayim Olichan Beis Avel. They both said in the beginning, so when they used to bring the food for the Suda Savra to the house of the Avel, what would happen? Ha'ashirim Bekaltol Shal Kesef, the rich would bring the food in baskets of silver, b'shal zav and gold, va'aniyim b'salim etzarim, and the poor would bring it in baskets, salim etzarim shal harava, in literally baskets made of peeled willow branches, klufa, v'hayaniyim b'spayshim, and I will say, what is this thing over here? Meaning that when a rich person was sitting shiva, so they would bring the food to the Suda Savra in baskets of gold and silver, and when the poor were sitting shiva, and the food was brought to them in baskets of peeled willow branches. And also, you have to understand something. Obviously, this is very public. This is very public because remember, that Suda's happening. It's not like today, where after the Levaya, the Avelim go home, or wherever they're sitting shiva, and they have their Suda essentially in private. Suda Savra was done in the street. So what happens? So every single time you had a loss, it was a very clear demonstration of your financial standing, of where you were on the financial spectrum. Hiskinu shiakom. So what happened? The poor people got very embarrassed. Poor people were very embarrassed because obviously, again, it was clear that they were poor. Hiskinu shiakul hakom v'vien b'salim etzarim shal rava klufa. the rabbis instituted that when it comes to Sudas Havra, the food for the meal of consolation must always be brought in baskets made of peeled willow branches. It did not matter how rich or how poor you were, everyone had to bring the food to the Sudas Havra in simple baskets. Why? Mipnei kvodan shalaniim. Out of deference, out of covet, out of respect to the poor, that no one should be humiliated. Tanna Rabbanan, Barishona, Hayumashkim Esa'adal. Well, it's very interesting. Remember, again, we saw, this is a while back in the Masechta, that there was a concept of Kos Shel Tanchumim, that when mourners would come back from the Levaya, the first thing they would be given was a big cup of wine. A big cup of wine. Why were they given a big cup of wine? So there's no big cheshbonos over here, because wine takes the edge off. Because they were given a big, to be able to take away a little bit of the grief, a little bit of the sadness. So the Gemara says over here that in the beginning, so Ashirim b'zichuches levana. So the rich were given their cup of wine. Zichuches levana literally means white glass. Now white glass can mean white glass can mean clear glass. But again, the point is they were given to drink in very expensive glass. Va'aniim b'zichuches sibua. And the poor people, they were given their cup, their glass of wine, in colored glass, which was an inferior type of glass. And again, v'hayu aniyim mispaishim. The poor were very embarrassed, because Gemara says it's very public. And again, no one wants their financial realities broadcast to the whole world. So the poor people were very embarrassed. So therefore the rabbis instituted, hiskinu shiyuhu akol mashkin b'zichuches tzivua. So the rabbis legislated that Rabbi said, when you drink that koshel tanchumin, everyone has to drink out of a colored glass, meaning from a glass that is from a cup that is made of colored glass, in order that the poor should not be embarrassed. Barishon, Rabbi said, is amazing. Barishon in the beginning, hayu megalin pnei ashirim umechasin pnei aniim mipnei shayim mushchar pnei mipnei batzora. Rabbi said, listen to this, and this is fascinating because it sounds so strange to us today. They used to at the levaya. They used to uncover the face of the dead person. So for the rich people, they used to uncover, like lahavdil, like a viewing. They used to uncover the face of the rich person who died. I also said, why would they do that? Because rich people generally looked very nice. So when they died, they looked healthy, they looked robust. So what happened? It would intensify the feelings of pain. Because here you see such a person who looked so nice, looked so healthy, lived so well. But they would never uncover the faces of the poor. Why? Because the poor, they did not look so nice. Their faces were often sunken because of starvation or whatever else. So the rich people had their faces uncovered. The poor people, and what happened? Obviously, by on the misbehavior. So we'll say again, here in a very public setting, people knew that you were a pauper. And therefore the rabbis legislated that we don't uncover the face of the dead at all, out of deference of what Shabbos says. So interesting, because today, if you were to mention the idea of uncovering the face of the maze, it is so alien. It is so alien to us today, but that's because Chazal legislated it that way. Next, Barishona, Hayumotzin Ashirim Bedargosh. In the beginning, they used to take out the rich people in a dargash. So we'll say now we are experts. We're like smicha on dargash already. So right, they used to take rich people out again on that leather bed, on that dargash bed. The aniyim and the poor, bekilcha. So we'll say, so Rashi's kilcha is just kilcha means like a stretcher. Rashi says mita shel mason. They would take the poor just out of a stretcher. So the rich people would be brought out on a nice leather bed. The poor people would be brought on a stretcher. V'hayu aniyim mispaishin. And again, the poor people were very embarrassed because Lamaisa, once again, their financial reality is being broadcast to everyone around them. Therefore, hiskinu shiyu akol motzim bekilcha mipnei kvodon shalaniyim. Therefore, the rabbis legislated that everyone should be brought out on a kilcha to preserve the dignity of the poor. We'll say, this is amazing. Barishona, hayu manichin es hamugmar tachas cholim yarim. We'll say, listen to this. Cholim yarim mason. V'hayu cholim yarim chayim mispaishin. We'll listen to this. So it used to be when a person died of some type of intestinal or stomach issue, so they would always place incense by or next to or under the funeral bier. Obviously, if a person died of stomach complications, it's quite possible that there was a negative odor when the person died. Therefore, they always used to put incense. So what happened? So the people, the living people who were suffering with certain intestinal stomach issues got very embarrassed. Why? Because essentially they were reminded that this is going to be done to their body when they die. Meaning they felt singled out. The incense was not done for anyone else. It was done for this person. Exactly. So therefore they felt singled out, and therefore they were embarrassed. Therefore, Hiskinu Sheyehim Manichin Tachas Hakol Mepnei Kvodon Shechol Ma'am. So this is very interesting. So therefore, the rabbis legislated that we always put incense on the funeral bier along with the body, along with the corpse, so that no one should be embarrassed. Barishona, Hayu Matbilin Esakilim Agabe Nidos Mesos V'Hayu Nidos Chayos Mispaishos. Rabbi said in the beginning, it used to be that if a woman died while she was a Nida, while she was in a state of menstruating, so what they would do is they would tovel, they would take to the mikvah all utensils that she had touched right before she died. Because technically speaking, a woman who's a Nida is Tamea, has ritual impurity, and if she could convey that ritual impurity to certain utensils, so they would immerse them in a mikvah.
Is this kale plain or is this kale of clothing?
It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Utensils. Utensils. Whatever she used. Hiskinu shiyehei matbilin al gabe kol anashim. So listen to this. So what happened? The nidos who were alive, the women who were in active state of nida when this happened, were embarrassed. So we'll say, I'll send you out. Why are they embarrassed? Because they felt singled out. Because here there was a woman who, because she died as a nida, was given this, you know, there was this special treatment. And at any time you feel singled out because of your status, it's very uncomfortable. Therefore, Hiskinu shiyehei matbilin al gabe kol anashim mipnei kvodon shel nidos chayos. Therefore, Allah said, the rabbis instituted that whenever a woman dies, we, by definition, we're tovel, we take to the mikvah any utensils that she may have used prior to her death, like in the immediate moments before her death, in order not to embarrass any women. Barishona, hayu matbilin al gabe zavin mesim, vayu zavin chayim ispaishin. But says similarly again, if a person died when they were in a state of zivus, a zav or a zava, which remember again is a person who had a particular type of emission that rendered them tame. So if a person died, so again, when they died, we would immerse any utensils that they used prior to their death in order to rid those utensils of a zav status. And what happened? The living zavin were very embarrassed because again, they felt singled out. So therefore, iskinu shehu matbilin al gabe hakol, mipnei kvodon shel zavin chayim. Therefore, the rabbis instituted that if a person dies when there is, that in general, we go ahead and we tovel everyone's kelim, meaning any kelim that they may have used before they died, bless you, in order not to go ahead and single out the zavin. We'll say this is amazing, and this is very contemporarily relevant. Barishona, haisa hotzas hames kasha, first wide line, second wide line now. In the beginning, burying the dead was as difficult, likrovav, yosir mimisas. So listen to this. It used to be that there was incredible pressure to give your loved one a very lavish levaya. Very lavish, meaning carving stations and everything. Right? No carving, I'm just kidding. Right? Meaning a very lavish levaya. Right? Very lavish levaya. Right? Meaning that you had to get like a nice casket, and not really as much the casket. You know what the big thing was? The big thing was designer tachrichim, right? Like a little horse or something, you know, designer tachrichim. You want, and again, this was Kavanah Meis. You wanted to give your loved one the very best for their final send-off. So the Gemara says, there were some people, so obviously, if you have the money, that's great. If you don't have the money, for some people didn't have the money, so the pressure of having to provide a top-notch levaya was even more painful than what? Even more painful than the actual loss of the individual. Amazing. Actual loss of the individual. Ad shahayu krovav manichin oso. Until what happened? Until ultimately, again, sometimes on both sides, there would be such incredible pressure to provide that levaya that the relatives, manichin oso ubarchin, they would leave the body, right? They'd shove, I don't know where, they leave the body. They deposit the body somewhere, and they wouldn't claim the body. They'd leave the body in the funeral home, leave the body in the hospital, whatever it was. Such pressure. Sometimes again, and this is unfortunately true to this very day, sometimes again in different areas, people feel such a need to keep up that sometimes again, they literally, this doesn't happen with levayas, but they would go ahead and abandon their dead so as not to feel the pressure of having to provide a designer levaya. Listen to this. When did all this change? Rabbi Gamliel saw what was happening. V'nahog kalos rosh ba'atzmo. Rabbi Gamliel obviously was the Nasi. As the Nasi, he, Baruch Hashem, had plenty of money, and whatever he didn't have, the people would certainly provide. Rabbi Gamliel commanded that when he was buried, he left the instructions that he should be buried in simple ordinary shrouds. That's what it means. Nahag kalus rosh ba'atzmo. He went ahead and literally he treated himself lightly. So meaning, again, he ordered that he be buried in simple shrouds. V'yatza b'klei pishtan. He was buried in simple flax shrouds. V'nagu ha'am achrav lates b'klei pishtan. I'll say, Rabbi Gamliel began the trend, which the trend then developed into the halacha, that we only bury in the simplest shrouds that we could find. Amar Rapapa, Va'idna Rapapa says, that's why today, Nag alma afilu b'tzarda bar zuza. So even, right, if you look at Rashi, Rashi says, tzarda, canvas. Even if you don't have flax, right, what you can even use a piece of canvas that you can go ahead and you can get for a zuz, and that is enough to write. So we'll say it's amazing. So Rabbi Gamliel changed the entire trend. You know, it's interesting that there have been movements like in certain segments of the Hasidic community, they've tried to do something very similar again with weddings. With weddings, to go ahead and make certain takanas that a wedding should, because again, we know the weddings carry with them incredible pressures as well. People feel incredible pressure to put on a particular type of chasana. So they made takanas to say, you do this, and if everybody abides by it, then essentially it goes in and rids the community of these type of social pressures. Rabbi Gamliel changed the trend, but it's amazing, you know, sometimes if you want to change a trend, it's not just enough to legislate. What do you have to do? You have to lead by example. Very interesting. All right, let's go back to it. You can't go ahead. We don't put the body, remember this on Chalamayit, we don't go ahead and put the body in the street. We don't put the mace in the street, because again, we don't, says the Gemara, Mishnah said, we don't want to encourage a spadim. Amara Papa, ein moed b'fnei Talmud Chacham. There's one exception to this, which is, there is no yomtiv, there is no Chalamayit when it comes to a Talmud Chacham. So what that means is, that when it comes to a Talmud Chacham, Rashi says, she'chol nahaspido. Even on Chalamayit, bless you, we are permitted to go ahead and eulogize a Talmud Chacham, v'chol shekin Chanukah and Purim, and all the more so what? All the more so Chanukah and Purim, which are rabbinic holidays, you are permitted to go ahead and eulogize the Talmud Chacham. V'hani mili b'fanav. That's only true if you're in the presence of the Chacham, Talmud Chacham, meaning if you're in the presence of the body. Aval shalom b'fanav lo. But if you're not in the presence of the body, then you should not eulogize on Chalamayit. Ini is that so? V'harav kahana sabdil rav zid minar da b'fum nara, b'yat rav kahana. Rav Kahana eulogized Rav Zavid. Rabbi said Rav Zavid lived and died in Nardo, and yet Rav Kahana eulogized him in Pum Nara, which was not Nardo, which seems to indicate that what? That she eulogized the Talmud Chacham even not in front of him on Chalamoid. No, here's the difference. Yom Shmua Hava. That was the day that they heard that Rav Zavid died. Ukefanav Dami. And Rabbi say again, the day in which you hear about the fact that a Talmud Chacham dies is the equivalent of what? Having the Talmud Chacham right in front of you, and therefore he was permitted to eulogize. Amar Ula, Hespet al Leif. See, interesting, the Gemara says, Hespet, Rashi says, Hespet, mitefach kineg, Aleif, mitefach kineged haleif. So he says, Hespet is all about, again, Hespet is about tugging on the heartstrings, right? That hespet ultimately again is right. Ash, because he quotes the pasuk d'chsev, ashadaim soptim, ashadaim soptim. So if you look at that's quoting over here pasuk from Yeshayahu, ashadaim soptim, literally on the chest. We go ahead and we literally on soptim in this context actually means that we beat ourselves. So the Gemara goes weiter. Tipuach biad kilos. Excuse me. Tipuach biad. So tipuach. So we'll say these are all different types. So here the truth is literally when they speak about hespet over here, they're not literally talking about eulogy. They're talking about they used to like, what the right word is? Beat themselves sounds so harsh. But, you know, they would beat against their chest. They pound. I don't know if that sounds better. They pound against their chest. So hespet is against the heart. Tipuch is biad. Kilos is stamping with your feet. Ten rabbanon hamakalis lo yikalis besandal. I'll say if you're going to stamp your foot in avelos, you should not stamp while wearing sandals. Ella b'minal, but rather you should go ahead and stamp only if you're wearing a shoe. Why? Mipnei ha-sakana. I will say, what's the sakana? The sakana is if you stamp too hard when wearing a sandal, you could break your foot. The shoe provides you a little additional support, therefore you should do that. I'm Rabbi Yochanan. Avel, kevan shenina rosho, shuv ein menachmin. Rashan le'shev etzel. I will say, very interesting halacha. The Avel, once he goes ahead and he nods his head, he should go ahead and the Menachem, the consolers, should leave. That again, remember, because the Avel is limited in terms of greetings, and greetings extend to welcoming people and saying goodbye to people, when the Avel gives you the nod, that is the sign that what? Your visit has concluded, and you should excuse you. You should excuse it. Rashi says, now Rashi actually points something very interesting. Nina Rosho, Shanira Shaniche Me'atzmo. Now the way the Pashup Shad of the Gemara seems to read is that when the Avel nods his head, that's his sign of thanking you for coming. He's excusing you. Rashi says, no, what it actually means is when he nods his head, that Nina Rosho indicates that he has accepted his circumstances. If he's accepted his circumstances, then what? There's no more need for you to say anything. You know, what's interesting is, you know, sometimes people in a base avel, sometimes it seems to be that they're saying things to make themselves feel better and not as much about making the avel feel better. So the Gemara says, if the avel nods his head, essentially telling you, you know, I'm okay. I'm okay. Not I'm okay that I'm not feeling pain, but I'm okay that I've accepted this and I'm in the midst of healing. Be quiet. You don't have to say anything. You could sit with him for a little bit, but don't feel the need to say something. Rabbi Yochanan says, "Hakol chayav l'amam b'nei nasi." Everyone is obligated to stand up for the nasi, chutz me avel v'chol, with the exception of an avel and a person who is ill. Rabbi Yochanan says, "L'chol omrim lahem shavu," and if the nasi comes in, you could only sit down after it's announced to sit down. Chutz mi avel v'chola, with the exception of avel and chola, where even if they do stand up, they are permitted to sit down at their own when they decide. Amrav Yehuda Amrav, avel yom rishon asur le'achol lechem mishalo. An avel on the first day of his avelus is not permitted to go ahead and eat his own bread. Meet me and I will say that again, the Sudas Havra, the meal of consolation, which is the meal that immediately comes after the levaya, has to come from other people. Where do we know this from? Because God said to Yecheskel, "V'lechem anoshim lo sochal." Now, I also remember again, Yecheskel lost his wife, and essentially, HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells him that he's not permitted to mourn for the loss of his wife. Now, everything that God tells Yecheskel that he's not allowed to do, we infer from that that those, in fact, are normative mourning behaviors. So, for example, God says to Yecheskel, "I don't want you to eat other people's food," which indicates to us what? That Lemaisa, under normal circumstances, the avel is provided for with the food of others. Rabbi Rav Yosef, what did Rabbi Rav Yosef do? Machlef Yisudu Asayu LaHadadi. They used to exchange meals with each other. And I will say what that means is they had an arrangement that whenever one of them would Chas Hashem suffer a loss, what would happen? They would agree that the other would give, they would exchange meals. So that way, again, no one was out. But this way, again, they were both not eating. They were, the avel, the mourner, was not eating of his own food. Ramri Yehuda Amarav, Meis Be'ir. If a person dies in a city, Kol B'nei Ha'ir Asun Ba'asiyas Melacha, all the members of that city are not permitted to do work. And we'll say, now what's going on over here? What does that mean? What Rav is concerned with over here is that Lamais, so we want to make sure that the needs of the dead are taken care of. Therefore, essentially what we say is that when someone dies in the city, no one is allowed to do work until when? Until we know for sure the kvura has been taken care of, the needs of the dead are taken care of. Rav will say, interesting, Rav Hamnuna ikla lidarmusa, lidrumasa. Rav Hamnuna went to a city called Drumasa, shama kol shipura de shachla. He heard the sound of the shofar, and I guess the shofar was the signal that someone in the town had died. Chaza hanach in shidika avdi avidita, but yet he saw that people were going about their work. Armeluhu lehava hanach in shibishamta. So Rav Hamnuna is outraged because again the halach is that when someone dies, you know, everybody has to stop what they're doing in order to provide for the needs of the dead. People are still going about their work. Rav Hamnuna said, "I'm excommunicating all of you. I'm excommunicating you guys who are still working." So what happened? So the Gemara said, Rav Hamnuna said, "Is there not a dead person in the city that you should close down your businesses and help with the needs of the dead?" Well, this is very interesting. Amrulay, and this is what we rely on today. Amrulay chavurasa. Chavurasa ika b'masa. I will say again, there are chavurasa. Again, there are groups. Rashi says over here. Now, this doesn't just mean chevra kadisha. What this means over here, look at Rashi, chavurasa ika. Chaburos hein, there are different groups. She'elu kovr mason shalahem levadam. Ve'elu kovr mason shalahem levadam. I will say there are burial societies. There are different burial societies in the community. People belong to different burial societies. So if you belong to a particular burial society, that burial society took the responsibility for taking care of you when you died. Therefore, this individual said to Rav Hamnuna, "We don't have to close down everything because since we know everyone belongs to a burial society, therefore what? We know that their burial needs will be taken care of. Therefore, again, it does not devolve upon the whole city, just on that particular chevra." Amar Luhu, so Rav Hamnuna said, "Okay." Rav Hamnuna said to them, "If that's the case, ihachi shari luhu. If that's the case, you know what? I'm taking you out of Shamta, right? You don't have to be excommunicated." All right, well, so you know what? We're going to stop over here for today with our Rav Yehuda. I'm not giving you homework because what's going to happen over the next days, or as you'll see, is the Tuesday's daf, as you could see, is very short. So, Emir Hashem, what we'll do is between tomorrow and Tuesday, Emir Hashem, we'll finish the Masechta. All right, so we'll pick up over here with Rav Yehuda, and we're starting again regular Hilchos Tshuva tomorrow morning at 5:45. We'll start the daf Emir Hashem at 6:00.